Welcome to the 10th episode of Redemption, a podcast series to save deposit return systems. Today, we examine the 9th practice from A Guide to Modern Deposit Return Systems, 10 Essential Practices, which you can find at bottlebillreimagined.org. The 9th essential practice deals with material processing and service fees. Let's go to the guide to see how this practice is articulated. Material processing and service fees for collected containers should be set up and paid to the collectors and processing or counting entities based on the number of counted and verified containers. Services related to the processing and recycling of beverage containers should benefit from economies of scale. The deployment of processing capacity should be optimized to reduce costs and environmental footprint. To understand why this practice needs special attention and how other countries are dealing successfully with it, I talked again with ReLoop CEO and co-founder, Clarissa Murowski. Why is it important to ensure that handling fees, which are paid for the collection, storage, sometimes sorting, preparation for pickup of returned beverage containers? So why must handling fees be set fairly? And what does that mean?
When we look at the cost of deposit return, there are expenses and there are revenues. And the expenses are basically 4 things. Collection. So imagine going into a shop and having someone take your container or putting it in a machine. And that's typically the most expensive part, okay? It's usually between 70 and 80% of the total expenses is collection. Then you have processing, logistics, and admin. Those are your 4 typical expense line items. So if we want to provide that convenience, easy collection for consumers, because that's the number one driver of performance, then we need to pay for whoever is going to be undertaking that role, usually a retailer, or it might even be a separate redemption center, or like we have in Canada, depots, and we need to pay them fairly. We want the place to be clean. We want the place to have good lighting. We want the place to be open when it's convenient to use it, and a whole other slew of quality in terms of the experience. So you've got to pay fairly. Now, you can have a massive debate about this, but ultimately, I'm a market person. I say, go to the marketplace and find out what is it going to cost to be able to provide this kind of service level to consumers. And you may get a series of different responses back from the market. It will definitely involve machines. There's no way of getting away from that because, truthfully, it's much cheaper to do it by way of machines. And there's also a huge volume reduction that you use. So that brings down the costs. There are formulas for calculating those handling fees. It's based on what is the total cost of collection. Similarly, with processing fees, you determine what is it that you want your processing company to do. And just so you know, processors receive all that material. They receive it loose, or they receive it compacted, but already devalued. And all they have to do is sort it between green plastic and clear plastic and a magnet for the cans. But ultimately, that processor is like any other processor, any other material sorting facility that we use for blue box recycling. You determine what is it that we want you to do? How do we want you to separate the material? How do we want you to count it? And where do you want to count it? Because we need to report back to government because they've got a rigorous reporting requirement. You put that in your request for proposals. It goes out to the market and you get your bids back. And that's it. And that cost is divided by the billions and billions of units that are going to go through the system. And that's another cost element that's added to that producer fee. All of that is very much based on the market-based model.
And to those who fear the market-based model will result in unfair outcomes, what are some of the backstop measures to ensure fair treatment for service providers?
I know that handling fees are a sensitive issue because in some cases they're put in legislation and sometimes they're not updated, so they're not high enough. In Europe, typically, and now in Quebec, the idea is the producer responsibility organization has to comply with the performance requirements. And if not, the penalties are huge. They will do their best to negotiate a fee that works. Because if it doesn't work, they're going to fall under their required convenience network. and they're not going to meet their performance target. If you've got that strong legislative framework, then you can rely on the market to sort itself out. If you don't, guaranteed, those handling fees are going to be too low and they're not going to stimulate a proper collection infrastructure. So you can set them in legislation and set them really high, but ultimately you're better off to do a strong regulatory framework with those essential practices.
So, because I think we're talking about the cost of service or the cost of handling and processing, I think in the US, there's questions as to the role of manual versus automated collection, especially in places like New York. We have a vast network of independent operators, and they're afraid of automated collection putting them out of business. So it would be great to help listeners understand why automation is important and how systems, you know, for example, like BC as an example, could utilize independent redemption infrastructure where the providers of those services are appropriately paid, but you're not upholding manual collection in such a way that sacrifices overall performance or system efficiency.
Well, first of all, a very big difference divide between Europe, where the vast majority of containers that are collected, most of the time, 90%, are done through machines. And part of the reason for that is because the deposits are typically higher in Europe and always have been. So there has been a tradition of actual consumers that purchased the beverage in the first place being the ones to return it. Because it's a return to retail system, the deposits are high. So we don't have as large a scavenging community as you would in, say, North America. So that's a key difference. So my hat that I wear is typically the experience in Europe. In terms of the manual collection, we know in Europe, even where we have only 10%, sometimes 20%, even sometimes 30% in places like Croatia, that manually collected material can also be handled very efficiently. And we can make that manual collection easier for the collectors. And I'm talking about things like getting paid sooner, not having to do too much sorting themselves, having ultimately an industrial RVM on the other side that sorts it for them. That is how we deal with manual collection in Europe. It's quite simple, actually. And what we're starting to see, and I think we're going to see it in Quebec with their new system that involves a lot of large volume return centers that are strategically placed in every region of the province to cater to those scavenging redeemers, is going to be a place where they can go in with mixed containers and run them through automation and get the refunds back quickly, even potentially right there and then be able to cash out after not having to hand sort by brand, let alone by container type. You just stick it in a machine and it does it for you. And you're not under pressure because you're waiting in a long grocery store lineup with a whole bunch of customers that are angry at you because you've got a shopping cart. I mean, there are ways of providing a very just system for those that are needed in jurisdictions like New York. I've been there with you, Elizabeth. I've seen it. But why can't we offer those people a super convenient, fair, clean, proper hours of operation place where they can be serviced? And then you know what you'll find is they may actually not need such a high handling fee because they're able to manage those containers much quicker and much easier than they were before, where they were encountering all sorts of silly roadblocks, frankly, because they were all based on inefficiencies.
Clarissa, tell our listeners a little bit about commingling agreements, why they're important in a system, particularly a decentralized system, but more importantly, why do we need to do away with extraneous sorting?
The commingling agreement is actually the norm in Europe and in Canada. We haven't known anything other than a commingling agreement. So I would say that commingling agreements is the place where we need to start. So what is a commingling agreement, first of all? It refers to a deposit system. It's an arrangement where the beverage containers of different brands of producers are mixed or combined at various stages of the recycling process, such as collection and transportation. You're not worrying which brand it is. Just think about all those cans and how they used to separate brand by brand. I mean, can is a can is a can. Why would you treat it any differently? Doesn't it make sense to all join together and just share in the pool collectively what are the costs of all the cans? So it's done in a way where containers lose their individual brand identity effectively. And they become part of a mixed pool. And the purpose is often to streamline logistics, like I said, processing of return containers, just making it more efficient. And there are multiple reasons why it's a good idea. I won't go into every single one, but let's just say there are five key reasons. First of all, there's logistical efficiency. You can just treat them all the same together. You can even compact them to some extent, and you can ship them and move them and process them together. It means a lot of cost savings. It means increased participation because it's actually more attractive to customers to return in a commingled system because the whole thing is faster and easier. And ultimately, the customer does not care about the back end. They just want it to happen quickly. There's an environmental impact because you've got optimized logistics and processing, so you therefore have less energy used. And of course, it facilitates the recycling infrastructure because you're dealing with good economies of scale where you can render top dollar for the commodities that you're selling. Now, we have commingled agreements in Eastern America because we have decentralized systems where brands were basically on their own to comply with the law. They're like in these little silos complying. And over time, they hired some smart consultants that said, you know what, let's just all work on this as a pool and we can all share in the costs and just work on it together. And that's a commingled agreement. And ultimately, those commingled agreements should be the norm. And they should be open to everybody, not just the powerful big brands. The smaller brands are the ones that need those commingling agreements more than anybody. So, as I said, that should become the norm. There shouldn't be a commingled agreement. It should be more like if you don't want to be a part of the system, then you have all of these additional regulatory burdens to meet because you're not part of that shared commingled pool.
If you have a commingling agreement where you're not doing all this sorting, how do they figure out who pays what?
This commingling agreement basically says to, let's say you got five producers. It says, look, you're all in cans and maybe producer one gets a much higher return rate than producer number five. But because we're all the same packaging, we're going to work as a pool and we're all going to claim the same return rate for that particular type of package. And we're all going to divvy up the costs equally according to sales. It requires that you just are in a pool and that you all kind of work together. And that's the leap that the brands have to make is that you guys are all in this together. You all have the same compliance obligations. You better work together than work apart. And I think that's just classic. That's the competitive nature of business. It's not natural to work with their competition. But on this, it's not about selling more beverages. It's just about working together to recover all of your beverages.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And capturing efficiencies in that whole set of activities.
Who better to give us insights into why processing and handling fees matter than someone who heads a redemption center? Ryan Castaglia is executive director of Sure We Can Education Center, New York City's only nonprofit redemption center.
I'm hoping that you can explain how commingling agreements and other DRS modernization tools like mandatory post-collection sorting, you know, something that would be paid for by the producers and would be automated, to cut down on the amount of manual labor that's currently involved in our deposit return systems in New York, at least. So talk about the solutions that are out there and could be put into legislation paid for by producers and distributors to save canners and redemption centers time and free them up to maximize their income through meaningful activities and enhance their livelihood, their sense of dignity, and achieve the outcomes that we're all looking for.
I think the arcane sorting requirements are a burden for sure, for everyone, really. And they come from a narrative about accountability that I don't think is totally true. Certainly, it gets bandied about a lot without much data to support it in terms of like pervasive fraud or people trying to redeem one distributor's brands with another. We'd love to see some kind of commingling type system that would reduce this. It would I mean, it would make our work easier. And as you've demonstrated really clearly in your data, it would make the system at large more effective and efficient. So I think there's a piece here of this work just shouldn't be so hard. And it doesn't have to be. And the reasons that it is today aren't necessarily because of accountability, but rather because people benefit from these inefficiencies. Even in a system that's oriented around intense accountability and a lot of sorting, that's more manageable if there's resources there to support it. But I think looking further than that, things like commingling or more automated systems, you know, when we're thinking about recycling outcomes, I just want to see this material handled in a responsible way. So I think automation has a real role to play in that. And we know some folks who are designing interesting technology systems that could help support that, provide the accountability piece as well. So it sort of remains to be seen how these things can be rolled out in an inclusive way, in a way that really recognizes and the needs of the folks who are doing the recycling. But I think it's a really exciting time. There's a lot of potential. I mean, people are really working on it, right? The canners are working on it. There's people working on the technology. I think the problem is really in the political realm, in the sense that distributors, initiators, producers, legislatures are resistant. These things are structured in the law and they can't really change without further structuring in the law. So it's up to these institutions to take comprehensive action, or really up to us to insist to these institutions that they take comprehensive action. It maybe create a context where we're not at loggerheads all the time with the distributors and we can actually engage in a real conversation about what can work for everybody, because surely there's something.
Well, that's just it. I feel like we're missing an opportunity for collaborative decision-making and a real dialogue about what's needed from both parties and what would bring benefit to both parties. I totally agree with you that we don't want policy decisions or legislative action that benefits one group at the expense of another group. But, you know, ReLoop's operating hypothesis is like, there's so much common ground, right? If you have a Venn diagram, there's a big overlapping space in which there can be mutually beneficial outcomes. And we're not even getting in that space right now, even at the point where we would be doing something that benefits one stakeholder group and precludes another. And so it's like we're missing a huge opportunity by not having collaborative decision-making, by not having a real dialogue, a good faith dialogue about what's needed on different sides. And again, exploiting that common ground. We're like, we're all in agreement that we want the best outcomes. And we're all in agreement that must be paid for by the producers. And we're all in agreement that canners are serving an essential functional role, and to support them would actually lead to optimized outcomes. You know, even just saying like ReLoop's principle around service providers is they need to be compensated fairly. Like that seems so basic. And yet the system is not even close to reflecting that.
I mean, I get frustrated too, because so much of this stuff does seem like common sense and simple. You know, it's frustrating. Again, it's a system that we already have, right? We have the bottle bill. It's working. The workers are there. The infrastructure is there to some degree. It's rusting. It's collapsing, but it can be supported. So in terms of environmental policy, we're not talking about the most controversial thing here.
Yeah. Well, and the systems can be simple and elegant, right?
Exactly. I think the cultural context of a place like Sure We Can really matters, that we include that aspect in our work beyond just the recycling, to say we want to envision a culture. We want to work together to raise our voice, to contribute to this conversation, to push things more in that collaborative, supportive direction. I guess I'd like to add that we really strongly feel like handling fees, a context that allows independent redemption centers to exist, is a really key piece in ideal DRS systems, at least as we envision them. We wouldn't exist, like the nonprofit that we have would not be able to exist without a handling fee. Canners started it. Canners led it from the beginning. The mission of Sure We Can is totally rooted in this idea that we are by, of, and for canners. It's concerning to see proposals in other states or systems where the handling fee is de-emphasized or doesn't exist at all, where power around these systems is highly centralized. There are ways, I think, to manage that in a responsible way or even an inclusive way, but they involve really strong regulatory frameworks and really strong oversight and listening to the community and all this stuff that we're not seeing when it comes to consolidated systems, at least here in America. So we feel, given that context, the handling fee is an extremely important and empowering element that allows workers to have power in the system, to like participate in an independent and empowered way.
Thanks to all our listeners who are so committed to learning about modern deposit return systems and the environmental and economic benefits they bring to our communities. In this 10th episode of Redemption, ReLoop CEO Clarissa Murawski helped us understand how handling fees are a critical part of what makes DRSs work and why it's important to have a strong regulatory framework for these different types of fees and their related services. Ryan Castella of Sure We Can reinforced the need for strong regulatory frameworks, but also equally strong oversight, plus making sure system operators are listening and responding to the needs of the community. We hope you'll join us for the 11th episode of Redemption next week, when we explore the last essential practice, management of material flow and financial data. We'll learn what clearing a container means and how technology can be a friend to modern DRS. In the meantime, don't forget to visit bottlebillreimagined.org to download the guide or subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge about these 10 essential practices for a modern deposit return system, we can move good bottle bills forward.